Good evening, morning, or afternoon, depending on where you are. Welcome to ITE1, Chapter 8, Supplementary Lecture, or Supplementary Lecture and Discussion. And so we're going to have a little bit of even a few people practicing a few things in this lecture. And this is to supplement the two chapters that Grace is currently in the middle of doing. And we just thought we'd actually explore in a little bit of, in a slightly different way, some of the principles in the notes. So to begin, obviously Grace is with me. I'm Elise Lonsdale, and Jackie McBride, who will be making her debut as a CAVI trainer today, will be along with me. So the first thing we're going to do is throw over to Jackie to introduce her small section, and then we'll come back to Grace and come back to myself. But please, during the lecture session, if you've got any questions, please don't interrupt. Please don't hesitate to interrupt. So without any further ado, it's over to Jackie.
The control button that works. Okay. Hi, folks. I'm Jackie McBride. Some people call me Dr. J. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what is actually a network. I'm sure you guys have heard of like the NBC or the ABC television networks, where you can go to California or Chicago or Los Angeles or, like maybe Melbourne or Perth or Sydney, and you can turn on the television of any ABC channel, and they'll be airing the same programs. And these are interconnected channels or interconnected television stations. We have all kinds of networks. We can have a cell phone network. Over here in America, in the States, we have this company called Verizon, and they're always advertising, "It's the network." Yeah, well, anyway. So we can have a cell phone network. We can have TV networks. We can have a human network, a social network, where people are working together and collaborating together on a project.
Facebook, huge network.
Yeah.
Well, it's a social network, isn't it?
It is. It is. You know, Carrie is wont to say that one of the first instances of networking was recorded in the Bible with regard to the reference to the Tower of Babel. So it's people connecting together to do stuff. But the kind of networking that we're going to be talking about in this course is computer networking. And basically, computer networking consists of two or more computers connected together in order to perform various tasks. And those tasks can be sharing of files, sharing of printers, or other hardware devices like scanners, cameras, there's just hard drives, there's just all kinds of devices that can be shared on the network. Does anybody have any questions about that concept?
I have a comment.
Go for it.
Most of the time, hopefully, your networks will work better than the Tower of Babel network did. But if not, we'll talk a little bit about troubleshooting next week.
Seriously, we hope that they do. But you know what? We're talking computers, and so the chances are that there's going to come a time when they won't. At any rate, usually these computers are connected together by some means that is called a media. And sometimes these are either wired or wireless or light. And we'll talk about that if there's time at the end of the lecture. But just understand that the computers must be connected together, okay? Does this make sense, and does anybody have any questions about that particular concept so far?
Just one comment. The actual pathway that the network takes, like the cable, is called medium, not media.
Interesting.
So far, it's making sense.
Yeah, we'll look that one up, I think.
Yeah, I do, because that's what I thought.
Yeah, no. I've heard,
or it can be called.
Somewhere. I think it can be called. Because mediums also refer to mystics.
Yes.
Actually, medium is the singular of media in the sense that...
Oh.
So sometimes we have one medium, or more, or lots of media.
Okay, this makes sense. I was like, because I've seen that, and I was like, okay.
So if there's no questions, then I'm finished with that part, guys.
Any questions?
Hey, now's your big chance, folks.
Come on, ask.
I think you did great.
We're just going to move on the next bit.
So,
any comments, Leon?
No, not so far.
Not so far? Is it making sense?
What, Mark?
I'm guessing what you were just describing could be the, the modem and router of the network.
Not quite. That too, but I think she means more fundamental than that. What about those little blue things that connects your computer to your router? Long blue things, actually. If they're blue, they might be different.
Not so little.
Oh, little or long?
Yeah. Media is actually...
I've seen what you're describing, the Ethernet cables. And I've seen them in blue, I've seen them in green, I've seen them in white and black and a whole variety of different colors.
Media.
They basically do the same, don't they?
Yeah, media is the actual wiring or the wiring or lack of wiring that the data travels through.
And it can be wireless, or it can be Ethernet LAN or other kind of wired setup. I don't really want to go into token ring and some of the other exotic
coaxial cable.
Right. Or it can be fiber optic, which is not a home networking thing. You will not see it in your average basic home office network. But in order to power the internet and things like that, fiber optic is definitely necessary, and that's it transmits light. But that's media. Any other questions?
I actually do have one. I was looking into, for my own computer's wireless. And I'm just wondering, I'm seeing the, how you got this, they sell the separate antennas or USB plug-and-play type antennas. Is it, say I've got my wireless modem, and it has the wireless capability and everything. Is it necessary to, would I have to basically redo everything in my whole network in order to use this, I forgot what brand name it was, but it was a specific brand name, and it was USB wireless antenna.
Or probably not.
Well, it depends on what you're doing, Mark. If you're, like, for example, if you're extending your network, you may be able to leave the existing infrastructure alone.
It depends if it's a router or an antenna.
It depends on what you're exactly talking about, because a lot of the antennas you might see on little black boxes, Mark, are actually part of what they refer to as integrated services routers, which might be, or even just a router that you have in, a router/switch with what's called an access point in it, which enables computers that aren't wired or plugged into each other, let's be really plain about it, to access the network because they have in them what's known as an access point, or an AP, as you might often hear it referred to as. So I've worked on networks, for example, where we've had a wired infrastructure and we've decided we wanted to introduce some laptops with wireless. So we've just extended onto the existing infrastructure and put in an access point for those laptops. So it depends on really what device it was you're talking about.
It also depends if you have another wireless device to begin with. Because if it's a router, you may not need one. You have two wireless routers, you may need two configurations.
I'm getting the impression he has one, so.
I do. I have a wireless. My modem is wireless compatible. I have had a friend of mine's brother's had his laptop hooked up to the wireless internet. He could connect to the internet and all that stuff through his laptop, but I guess the question is, I'm not finding any antennas except for...
Well, sometimes they're not, and I think that maybe...
Sometimes the antennas are built in, and they're just kind of hidden inside the device.
Yeah, but I think we might be straying a little bit.
Just a bit.
I agree. So, basically, we can talk about that off-channel, if you like, Mark, as to exactly what little black box you have there. So, if there are no more further questions...
Sounds good to me. Let's
move on. Okay, we'll come back another time for that. Okay, if there are no more further questions or comments, I'd like to invite Grace to come along. We've actually worked out what we'd like to discuss prior to... prior to our session this afternoon, or this evening, and Grace has quite a bit to contribute, so if there are no more comments, I'd like to come along with Grace, start with Grace. I'll just open it back up to the floor.
Okay. If there are no more questions or comments, I'd like to say great job, Jackie, first of all. And we are
going... sounding very good, folks.
All right.
We are going to talk about the devices that can be on a network. You've got two types of devices. You've got hosts and peripherals. Now, hosts are devices that have to have an IP address. So your computer, when it's plugged into a network, is a host. Your printer, when it's plugged into your computer, not necessarily a host, usually a peripheral. But if you have one of those nifty network printers that plugs in directly to your router and is a network printer, that is a host. So sometimes devices can either be peripherals or hosts. It all depends on if they have IP addresses. So you're probably wondering what the deal is with IP addresses. I know that you, Mark, have done peer-to-peer stuff and are working on your brother's printer. So you know that your computer has a name, right? Do you know what your computer's name is?
Let's see, I got actually three different computers hooked up.
Oh, just any name, just the name of one of them.
Well, we got, my brother's is just named Dan.
Okay, so we have Dan. Dan can also be referred to by an IP address, and I don't know Dan's IP address, so we're just going to say that Dan could be 192.168.1.3. Now, wouldn't it be much harder to find that computer if you had to remember 192.168.1.3 instead of just that your brother's computer's name was Dan?
Yeah.
So, how would you like it if you had to, instead of typing in google.com, type an address like 67.128.54.32, instead of remembering just www.google.com?
I would have to shoot the creator of that, but, you know.
Well, believe it or not, that's kind of how computers work. We have the benefit of something called a DNS server to, when we type in a name, go out onto the internet, go onto your DNS server and say, what does this name resolve to? And it actually picks up that IP address and correlates it to your name, and you get to go onto the internet, and there you go, there's google.com. So just like your host computer has an IP address, Dan has an IP address, the hosts on the internet have an IP address. Each host also has one or more MAC addresses. These are the physical addresses. IP addresses are logical addresses used by the routers and the internet to find your computer. The MAC address is a physical address, and each network card has a MAC address. So your wireless card, if you've got a wireless card on your laptop, and your network card each have a MAC address. They're built into the card. They cannot be changed. And they're a 48-bit physical address for each one of your cards.
I have actually... Oh, go ahead. I'll wait.
I was just going to say, in some rare cases, they can be changed, but it's not wise to do. And it's most good cards that's actually burnt in the MAC address that that Grace is referring to, which is a 48-bit long number, is actually burnt into the card. And it is just as important as having an IP address. Sorry, Mark, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have a video game, a Nintendo DS Lite system that I have, actually at one time I had it hooked up to my wireless modem and I was able to play games with, I don't know where the person was, but you know, it was over the internet, on the Wi-Fi, whatever. And I would imagine that this game system would have very similar technology as a computer as far as the network stuff is concerned.
Here's the thing. Every network interface, whenever you have something that can connect to a network, be it an Ethernet or a wireless or whatever, has to have a MAC address. Okay,
that's your cell phone. If it can connect to the internet, has a MAC address.
It can, I believe.
Then it has a MAC address.
and
it stands for Media Access Control.
It does.
My internet radio has a MAC address, which I have out in the lounge room. It connects to my network and does two things. It connects to the internet, because it's all got access to my network, and connects to my file server to play my, let's say, collection of files I have on my file server. So it's a host with a dynamically assigned IP address, which we'll come to in a minute, but it does have an IP address and a MAC address. And like any other computer or host with a device with an IP address, referred to as a host, has full read access to the resources. So we've seen it done with TiVos. There's a lady up the road from me who has a TiVo on her network, so she can download her television movie type things or whatever they do with them. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the computer or the printer. It can be many other types of devices now.
Your Nintendo DS has one.
Yes, game consoles are becoming common now.
Actually, I'm in the process of actually trying to find out where that little bad boy is in my system here. However, I wonder if messing around with that part of the console would be a bad thing and Nintendo might kick my butt.
Might be printed on the Nintendo, actually.
Yeah, it might be. Grace was telling you guys about that an IP address is a 32-bit binary number. Binary numbers consist of ones and zeros only, and that's how the computers understand things. And right now, I'm putting up in the chat window, she cited the address of 192.168.1.3, and I'm going to show you what that would look like in binary.
Woo! Try to remember that when you want to address your brother's computer.
So,
ain't that fun?
Not very much fun at all if you let the computers think in binary.
Oh, good Lord.
So what we're trying to say here is that we talk about names like internet, like websites, or your brother's computer called Dan. My computer I'm on is called Enterprise. My file server is called Challenger. And I can address those on the address bar and type in / Challenger and off I go. But conversely, I can type in / 192.168.1.11, I think that address is actually.
And 1.3 in the...
No, I'm just saying for Challenger on my local network and end up in the same place. So, yeah. And then the next level down, I guess you could look at it, Mark, is that the computers even think on a lower level, and that's the binary that Jackie was just referring to.
And binary, you can only count in one and in zero.
The 192.168.3.1 or Dan or Challenger ultimately get translated into the binary. That's what we're trying to tell you.
And humans can translate those numbers into binary, but we probably won't go into that today.
I just did.
You just did.
I just did.
People sitting here ready to throw up.
But it's a pain in the you-know-where, ladies and gentlemen.
It is.
I would imagine. Have you ever done that yourself, Grace?
Absolutely.
We all have. Well, it's not covered in this course, but for those of us who are doing discovery, it is covered in somewhat more detail.
You must know it well.
We have to know it.
I see. And I would just... what I'm getting out of this is I think what you're basically saying is the combination of ones and zeros, have it be a row of ones and then a row of zeros and a row of ones, or one one and a zero and a, you know, it just, whatever you're looking for depends on the ones and zeros.
That's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
And don't worry about it. We were just trying to show you what it looks like. Mark, we were just trying to show you what a 32-bit IP address in binary looked like. So
and show you why down to decimal is so much easier.
Exactly.
Is there some...
All right, Mark, let's try an exercise. Sorry, I cut you off. You go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say, is there some kind of a program that I would imagine there is a program that converts the binary into the
Windows calculator.
Windows calculator, and we have keyboards, so you have to do it manually.
So
crack
it.
Open a copy of Windows calculator.
It,
Yep, the Windows calculator, or most scientific calculators, put it into decimal mode, type in a number, and hit the bin button or radio button, and you'll see the equivalent binary number.
And there are probably plenty of tools online that will do it for you as well.
Oh,
just Google it up.
Google it up. So, all right, Mark, unless Grace has got more to say, I'll take a little bit.
No, let's do a hands-on.
Let's do a hands-on, guys. Okay. And I know, Mark, we did this one night recently, you and I. I want you to go to... does everyone know here...
We're going to do a ping, aren't we?
we are, actually. So... We are going to go to the Run dialog, Windows R, or if you prefer to bring up your Start menu and cursor up or down to the Run dialog, and type in CMD for those who have not already done it, or those who are listening on the recorded version.
I love it how it. I just did the Windows R, and it brought it up, and it already says in the little window,
yes,
CMD.
In Mark's case, yes, because it's the last thing that you must have run. But there are other programs you can run from that dialog. So make sure that it does say CMD, which is short for command. And if it doesn't, type that in and press enter. When you do that, a nice little black box will appear, which is the DOS box under Windows. And we can start doing things with it. The first thing I'm going to ask Mark to do is ping. Now, we want to say we ping. Ping is a command. And let's see if the lady with the acronyms is on duty today. What does it stand for, Leone?
Is that ping, Elise?
Yes, it's ping.
Packet Internet Groper?
Well done. It refers to, you know, pinging, seeing if we can get a response back from another host. So the command is ping, so if you type in P-I-N-G... space, and won't worry about outputting the text files just yet, guys. Space, let me see. What about qcat.org?
Well, it's back up.
Yeah, we were having internet problems earlier this morning.
Okay. All right, Mark. Can you sort of have a think about what's come up in that box if you've done it, and if you have trouble, I'll help you.
At the moment, I'm just... typing it in.
You will have to use your JAWS cursor a little bit.
Yeah, for those of you out there in JAWS land, that's how I do it.
Or your WE cursor, or your...
System access, or not system, NVDA review mode.
NVDA review mode, or your site if you happen to have any.
I'll
type it to a text file. Okay, how'd you go, Mark? Did you get it in? Why are we waiting for Mark to do that? Let me explain it. Okay. It's ping, which is the command, P-I-N-G. Then you put a space, because you have to tell a computer, well, we're not talking about the command anymore, we're talking about the object, which is, in this instance, qcat.org. So we're asking the command to do something to qcat.org, and the command is ping, and qcat.org is the argument, so to speak. Now, I've done it on mine, and I came back with an IP address, and that IP address is the IP address that's been assigned to qcat.org, and to any other websites that are probably on that server as well, but we won't go into that. So qcat.org is coming up on my system as 203.161.99.234.
What a coincidence.
What a coincidence, yes, we're all running, we've all got the same DNS, funny about that. So it's easier to go, well, I'm going to go and visit www.qcat.org and see my, you know, lectures. I don't want to have to go, oh, well, I've got to go and visit 203.161.99.234, because you're not going to remember that too well, are you?
And I've got an idea.
People.
I suppose it would.
Well, it wouldn't really... Go on, Mark.
By what you're telling me, and anyone else who's listening, typing in, if you know the IP address into a browser, it would bring you to...
Why don't you try it?
Not in this case, most likely. But it can do if it's a local system. I don't know what's going to happen. No, because the server wouldn't know which website to serve up. There's a thing in the new HTTP, the newer HTTP protocol, when I say newer from about 1996, where it looks up what actual name, it's what we call name-based domain. So yes, crudely speaking, Mark, you are correct. And often in some of the labs in the ITE 2 course, which is sort of ending up in CAVI at the moment, you are required to do that sort of thing. That's because the web server knows it only has to serve up one website for that IP address. But in the case of QCAT, it's now serving at least two websites, and many hosting companies will serve up literally hundreds of websites and chain them to the one IP address. So there's a little thing in the HTTP protocol that tells the server which particular website at that IP address to serve back to you.
Yeah. Here's a question for you. You know how you do your ping and you, whatever you're pinging, and it brings back the packets. What's the significance of 4 packets?
Yep.
Why not just 1, 2, or 3?
Okay. Well, we need a certain amount to know, because sometimes you can get a phenomenon of what's called packet loss. So let's say we send out 4 packets and we only get 3 back. That would indicate that we've got a packet loss of 25%. And when you're dealing with lots and lots of packets, like the default on the Linux machine actually is keeps going until you tell it to stop, actually. So, you know, the Windows one only sends out a few. So we need to know out of a given number of packets as to how many are going to get there and how many may be lost on the trip. We also,
for example, yesterday...
Sorry, Greg.
For example, yesterday, Kerry was doing a ping, and he got 3 of the 4 packets returned to him, so it was a 25% packet loss when he was doing the ping of qcat.org, or cisco.com it was.
Has anyone, I haven't gone to the second site yet for qcat vision, whatever yet.
Cisco Vision, it'll come up with the same address. CiscoVision.org should show the same IP address.
So, what I guess what I'm asking is, did that problem that I was making you aware of there at least get taken care of yet, or no?
Yes, we're back up on the air. It's the same server. When one dies, the other one dies.
Oh, cool. Okay, so since the one's up, the other one's up too. Okay, cool.
And this internet is kind of intermittent sometimes.
You know, I've got to watch whether I ping CiscoVision.org or www.CiscoVision.org, because I would actually, and the way I've got my system configured, return a local IP address from Challenger if I pinged it without the www's. But that's only because I'm developing the website local here before putting it up. So we need to know as a technician, Mark. Remember the other day you were trying to work out whether you could communicate with your brother's machine. One of the first things a technician does is to ping a host.
I can too.
You can. Cool. All right. So we need
I
to can, know.
I just don't know why the printer's not.
Okay.
I mean,
well, that's a little bit further down the track. Yeah, and that's and some of this may actually well be covered in Grace's lecture too next week. So we need to establish it's going to work at this level. If you don't get it to work at this level, it's not going to work at any other level. And this is really what we call low level sort of stuff here. So if we don't get back a ping from the host or the entity that we want to talk to, then we have to not really go any further. We've got to fix it at that level.
As Carrie likes to say.
Yes, go on.
It don't mean a thing if you don't get that ping.
That's it.
You guys, yeah, that's cool.
Aren't we all clever? So computers can have names. Like I could ping local, it's not visible to the internet, but my own private IP addressing here is if I were to ping 192.168.1.11, I would get exactly the same result as if I were to type in ping space challenger, which is the internal, which is the name of my own file server here at Lonestar Media. The similar thing would happen over at QCAT. They've probably got over at the association, they've probably got the server, you know, there's probably some internal server name for that machine.
Yep.
And, yep, so they would have the same result. And that's what we need to do. Machines should also be named, which I think Grace was touching on before, and you do that by working in the properties of my computer. And it's one of the first things It's on the computer name tag. So I've called all my
computer,
usually the first tab. Usually I the first thing I do when I make a new Windows machine is give it a name, so that it's easy for me to find it on the network.
And if you're in a peer-to-peer network, you've got to make sure to give it a worker bill, that's what I was going to say.
Well, yeah. You know, Mark, you've been in what's called a peer-to-peer network, and I think Grace may have touched on this yesterday. So, yes, you will need to make sure all the machines are in the same work group.
And we don't actually talk
about
it. If
it worked, though, she would
much.
Get a ping.
I pinged all of my computers, and I'm getting everything back. Perfect.
A really good way to check it is to actually go into that computer name tab and actually go in there and physically check your workgroup name and make sure every computer has the same workgroup name just for double check, sure, safe.
Good idea.
I have noticed, though, too, that unless I didn't set it up right when I set up my network, I have noticed I can't access and the folders, if I put, like I did, I tried to put a little troubleshooting note into one of the network folders so I could actually go onto my computer and look at it and whatever. Can't do that. For some reason, it won't let me look at what's on the...
Okay. The other thing, I missed some of that because I was looking ahead at my notes, but have you heard of the concept of sharing, Mark?
I have heard of it, yes.
Okay, what you need to do on the machine that you wish to see, like let's say we wanted to be in your room and look at what's on your brother's computer, your brother would have to share out a particular resource, whether it be his shared documents or his whole C drive, we don't recommend you do that, or a particular folder. When that folder is shared out, it becomes available. And the same goes for the printing. There's actually a thing in Windows, Mark, called file and printer sharing. First, that needs to be turned on,
that's
and then when that's enabled, sorry, Mark.
That's okay, what let me show.
All right, now I can see what's going on here. So we can ping the machine, so we know that we've got a physical connection from your machine to your brother's machine, and anything like a router or anything that may be in between is letting the packets through. We have to tell that machine has to grant its resources to anybody like you who wants to look at it. Now, for that to happen, you've got to turn on file and printer sharing, and then once file and printer sharing is switched on, you've got to then go to each of those resources, and the same applies to the printer, whether it be a folder or a directory or a printer, and share that printer out across your network. Now, one of the things that Windows XP does to make that a lot easier, I used to always have to go in and fiddle it in Windows 2K and Windows 98 and all that, is that it does have a file, it does have a network setup wizard, which I must say for what you're doing is probably going to help you quite a bit. It won't break any of the existing settings. In actual fact, it will prompt you and probably ask you, do you want to turn on file and printer sharing? If you get that prompt, answer yes. So it will enable the machine for you, and if necessary, configure the Windows firewall, because since Windows XP Service Pack 2, it does come with a firewall, and the little network connection wizard will actually go in and, you know, tinker with the firewall on your behalf to make it so that the packets will get through. So that's probably the next thing you need to do on both your computers.
Great for a simple network. Infuriating if you want to configure it in depth.
I never run it for anything I do here.
Okay, well.
Okay. Almost at the end. Now, and then we'll drop back to... if we haven't got any questions, I'm just going to do a little bit more on the binary thing, just one thing, and we'll drop back to Jackie for some cabling discussion. So at this point, are there any questions?
Were we going to get into subnet masks and all that stuff with them, or were we going to just...
Let them know that it's there. Let's just tell them it's there. So
we'll do a little bit of it next week.
Yeah, we'll do a little bit. All right, Mark, run that command I taught you last week called ipconfig on your computer in that black box, ipconfig, and let's have a look at the three lines that come back.
All right, run that by me one more time. I printed it out, but I don't have that piece of paper.
That's all right. It's just a one-word command. At the command prompt, it's ipconfig, ipconfig.
And we will probably do this one more time next week just for review's sake.
See if it sticks, yeah.
This is irritating me, this text chat, because I tried to throw the whole ping in the result of the ping command in the text chat.
No, you almost can't do it.
And it won't let me do it. Irritates the fire out of me.
I thought you were going to say something else for like half a second.
Yes.
Oh, please, Grace.
She
not on air.
In person, that might be a different story, but she catches herself quite nicely on air here.
No, it was a half second.
I'm a preacher's wife. Are you kidding?
Yeah, that's right. Preachers' wives behave themselves.
Yeah.
When they sleep.
When they sleep. Yeah, that's right. Got it.
Morning all.
What?
Okay, Mike, how are we doing with our IP config hierarchy?
Okay, we're going to move along.
Okay, now it says domain not set. IP address. Okay.
Just type in ipconfig.
That's what I did.
Can somebody put that in the chat for me?
Sure.
He's already got the screen display up. He's just finding the output a bit overwhelming.
Okay. You may have more than one Ethernet. You may have more than one network interface on that computer, Mark. So yeah, go on.
I was going to say what I'm seeing here is connection, specific, DNS, suffix, domain, net.
We probably should output it to a file so that it doesn't scroll off the screen.
Invalid.
Can you see a line on that screen that starts with the words IP address?
DNS, suffix. Ethernet, adapter, local area, connection. Connection, specific, DNS,
next line.
Suffix, yeah. And then, we got the IP address, 192.168.1.66.
Okay. Excellent. All right, so that's the IP address of your computer. That's either been configured manually, or it's been assigned by a nearby DHCP server. And in probably your case, it's been assigned to it by DHCP server, and we'll talk about that probably in Grace's lecture next week. The next line under that is what's known as the subnet masks. The subnet mask, can you see that there, Mark?
255.255.255.0, yeah, yep.
Okay, and under that you'll see a line that says default gateway, so tell us what the address is for that.
192.168.1.1.
Okay, that's good.
That's your router's IP address.
That is actually your router's IP address, internal IP address.
I'm going to have to remember that. That would be a good thing to probably remember. Although it seems like, is that like a default router? It seems like every router I've ever
had. A lot of routers have that as their default address.
However, having said that, mine is 192.168.0.1. So,
mine at home is 192.168.1.254.
Oh, you're on the same standard.
So it varies.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Your router is actually where?
In Madison.
Oh, okay. When you said at home, I thought you meant
got
my house.
Homes.
Yeah, no, she's not talking Australia there.
Okay. Mine's the same as Grace, and the reason I've done that is that out of the box, my router came in at 192.168.1.1, which is okay, nothing wrong with that. That's the standard for most of the Linksys home routers, and we're all talking Cisco here, so we all like Linksys. However, because I've got other things that are configured here, I took it to the billion standard, which is the 192.168.1.254. because I just wanted to configure my router and slip it in and turn everything back on and make it go. So you can find, Mark, that this address will be different if you go to, say, another person's house and you want to look at their network.
But I think here's the point that we were making. Last night, Grace talked about the subnet mask a little bit when she referred to classes of IP addresses and that kind of thing. And that is the subnet mask. When you see 255.255.255.0, that means that it's a Class C subnet, or a Class C network, which is what she was talking about last night.
Yeah, that's right.
That's binary.
That's what it looks like in binary, if anyone's interested.
I think the key point that I always say to my students is Class A has one 255 before the zeros, Class B has two 255s before the zeros, and Class C has three 255s before the zeros. So Class A is 255.000, Class B 255.255.00, Class C 255.255.255.00.
A good way to remember that in Braille, if you know Braille, is that your literary A, B, and C, if you put a number sign in front of them, those are 1, 2, and 3, and that's how many 255s you get in each class.
That would be awesome.
That's a good idea.
Hey, I got one question here, and I don't know if it has any bearing on anything that we're talking about, but that zero at the end with the
subnet mask, yep.
Yeah.
Okay, we won't go too far into that, but that denotes...
Yeah, is that... That's always...
No, that just tells us that it's actually also zero in decimal. Now, an IP address, the same as subnet mask, is divided into four chunks, four groups of, you know, certain numbers. So we basically add all these numbers up and we get 32 bits. Now, depending on how these numbers are determined in binary, will determine how many bits are set to the network and how many bits are set to the host portion. And that's another thing we won't discuss too much here today. But there's two constituents or two parts to an IP address.
But they
and
can
some
change.
Of it's the host. And they can change, yes. For example, on your network, the majority of the IP address, the 192.168.1, is actually the network portion of the IP address, which means that we've got 24 bits, if you looked at it in binary, reserved for our network, and 8 bits, because remember the difference between 32 and 24 is 8, are set to the host portion of the IP address. You want to clarify, go ahead.
What we mean by the host portion of the network is how many hosts can that particular network accommodate? How many computers or cell phones or devices, whatever it is, can that network accommodate? So in a Class C network, as you usually find in your home network, you could have as many as 254 hosts, theoretically. Theoretically. You can't really with XP, but...
Mm.
So in the subnet mask, you have 255.255.255.0. Each of those 255s, each section can hold 8 bits. So 8 times 4, there are 4 sections, equals 32. And that's how we remember how many bits we actually have.
Unfortunately, we don't do binary in this module, though.
No, so we won't go much further with it.
Wouldn't it have actually been a better idea to actually have a little bit of binary in each of the...
Not quite yet, because what we're doing with this lecture, Mark, is that we're actually teaching the concepts of, you know, having an IP address and it's got 32 bits, because you can get people to learn those sort of things, you know, by rote. And we just want to teach the basics of concepts of networking, because we've still got to have a look in at cables. So the reason we do the binary is that there's a technique known as anding, and we sort of put one against the other, so to speak, to work out a thing called the network address, and it's a little bit beyond the scope of today's lecture. So it's just that we want to make you aware.
We're telling you so you know that it's there.
So you know it's there. You don't have to work with it in IT1, but you know that it's there to give you a good basis for if you do want to go on to do further study, and it just complements the official lecture that Grace is halfway through at this point in time.
Gotcha.
If there aren't any more questions, yeah, sorry, Mark, for cutting you off, but we better move this along. So we can just have a couple of comments on this, and then we'll move into cabling.
We can do cabling next week. I do have it written down if we don't have time.
Yeah, I know. No, but I know that Jackie's got something to talk about. So.
No, it's fine. We can do it next week if you guys
want. Yeah, if you want.
Doesn't matter. It's up to you guys.
At least it's the concept of, you know, swapping some pins around. We don't have to remember our pinouts, but... Yeah, the fact is that there are crossover and straight through cables. But Mark, I think you did actually have something to say.
I just want to mention something very quickly to Mark, actually. The reason you need to know this complex network stuff, and you may have never seen this before, is that if you ever get to the point where you are fixing people's networks and you are fixing people's computers to go onto the internet, this is the knowledge that you will need to have to be able to make sense of what you're looking at when you are fixing other people's computers or, in fact, fixing your own computers. And if you don't know how to do this, that's why you ring up the people at the ISP and they help you. But this knowledge is meant to teach you in a vague idea of how all this fits together, so that if, for example, your brother's computer can't get onto the internet, you guys can figure out how to fix it. But that's not really the aim of this course. We just give you a taster so you've got some idea as to how that all works.
Mm, sounds good. And all I was going to say... was and Grace knows I was the guy that when she first approached me with this class, I was like, is there any real hard binary calculations and stuff that I'll need to know? And I was all freaking out about it. So yeah, no. I suppose it's a good thing.
Yeah, we'll spare you that.
At least you know it's there. You don't have to work with it at this point in time, but at least you know it's in the background. Well, if there's no further comments or questions, I'd like to just have a brief visit into cables if you want to do it, Jackie. Otherwise, we can leave it to another lecture, and otherwise we'll probably start thinking about winding up.
If you've got stuff on pinouts, that'd be probably a good that'd be a good thing to do.
I'm one of the sad individuals that knows them.
Say that again, Kerry. I didn't catch it. I'm sorry.
I just said I was one of the sad individuals that knew about the cables. In fact, Geraldine had a little song that we used to sing to Graham. You know, green, white, green, blue, etc. And that's how we knew our cables.
Why don't you teach
it works,
that song?
By the way.
Is Geraldine? Yeah, Geraldine's here. She can teach the song.
Does she even remember it?
That's the next point.
Well, we haven't got Sue here to tell her what to sing.
We'll look that up and we'll give it to you next week.
Yeah, why not?
It's on a recording.
Just a refresher, yeah.
We'll just have to find out what lecture it's on and go get it out.
Put it on the site.
It's on the cable demo lab.
Okay. Well, we'll see what we can do with a bit of skillful editing. Well, we don't really need to give the pinouts, but suffice it to say, just to say that not all cables are created equally, I guess, is really what we need to say.
All right. But let's talk a little bit about... We talked a little bit about... the various kind of internet of network connectivity in terms of I talked about a little bit about Ethernet cable, and Mark says I have seen these in black and white and green and gold and every other color under the rainbow practically. For those of you who have not seen an Ethernet cable, it kind of looks like a phone jack on steroids. It's
I love it.
It's bigger and better.
It is.
I like that one.
If you ever try and jam it into a phone socket, it won't fit.
It won't fit. And you'll be saying words that, yeah, okay. So it kind of looks like a phone jack on steroids. And there are two kinds.
Also, I was going to say, also, wouldn't it be a good idea to say just to Ethernet cable is as far as diameter around the actual cable itself is a little bit thicker too than a USB cable.
Well, yeah, it can be. Now, this is usually called twisted pair or unshielded twisted pair, to be more precise. There are other kinds of Ethernet cables, such as coaxial cables and this kind of thing. You usually do not find these in home networks anymore. They've pretty much gone the way of the dinosaur. But I can still remember, ladies and gents, working with organizations.
Actually, there's one sense where they take where they do come back, and that's in our cable. If you've got cable TV, you'll have one from the wall to your router box.
That's true. I'm talking about a whole network made of them. Yeah. Fortunately, unshielded twisted pair has taken the place of that stuff. But yeah, it was interesting working with those things. Yeah.
Make sure the Terminator wasn't in each end, or your network would die.
Yep. Exactly. So that was untwisted shielded pair or UTP Ethernet cable. It, like I said, it looks like a phone connector on steroids. There are two types of them in the sense that one is known as a straight-through cable, and you find this usually when you connect, for example, your computer to your router or whatever, your modem, if you want to call it that, your router modem. And then there is another kind that's called a crossover cable. And you connect what they call like devices. So if you wanted to make a peer-to-peer network, say between two computers, you would actually connect the crossover cable between the two computers and make your peer-to-peer network.
There's a really cool lab in Discovery One where you get to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So you'll learn how to do it. And if you try to hook a straight through cable where a crossover cable ought to be, or vice versa, it doesn't work. It goes so.
But don't be afraid of doing that. It just won't work. Nothing worse will happen to you.
Yeah, it's not going to blow up. That's right. It won't. It just isn't going to work.
Actually, interestingly enough, you'll be happy to know that luckily for our students, there's a whole lot of gear that automatically detects and fixes up for that for you now. So in 2009, it will do the necessary flip-flops to make it all happen without you knowing which cable you've got. But as far as our course is concerned, you do have to know the difference.
Yeah, because some of them won't.
Some of them
that's
don't automate.
It's always a good idea to know
like
that kind of stuff. You know, even though, I guess, in my opinion, even though it's not going to be an issue in the future, it's always a good idea to know the way to do it, even if it is becoming an issue at some point. You know, then you can fix it.
Believe me, if you want to go into the IT field, you've got to know something about networking. You really, really do.
When you're in the IT help desk, you're the jack of all trades. You got to know a little bit about everything. A little bit about the hard drives, a little bit about software, virus, security, network. You get it all, and you need to have a little bit of knowledge about everything.
I think the point I'd like to make is that the reason IT people are paid so well is because that they do know stuff. And it's actually knowing that stuff that allows you to fix other people's problems, which is why they pay you. If you don't know the stuff, people won't pay you, and that's how you earn your money in IT, is by being familiar with whatever it is you're familiar with and working and fixing those particular things. That's what the job is all about.
Did anybody have any additional questions or comment, or want me to cover something different?
Not at this point in time.
Oh, I should say something to you in terms of the crossover versus the straight cable. You can actually tell them apart by means of the coloring, if you can have enough eyesight to do that, which I do not. But as you look at it on a straight through cable, the coloring is the same on each end. Whereas on a crossover cable, you find different colors on different on the different side pins. Of each on the different pins of each end of the cable. So it's a little bit reversed. I'm not explaining that well.
No, we won't. Oh, it doesn't matter.
The cable making lab. Yeah, the cable making.
Yeah.
Lab. If you want to hear about the colors, cable making
lab, guys. Yep, it's a beauty. It's a great lab. The phone jack on steroids, otherwise known as an RJ45, is actually somewhat transparent, and you can actually see into it and see how. In some cases, you can see in where the little colored cables are connecting. So,
a handy hint for blind people, though, to tell your cables apart. Simply, if you can, try and get a crossover cable with a different kind of jacket, or label them.
Yeah, label them. Actually, blind or sighted, it doesn't matter. They label cables. Just to make sure that they know everybody knows what they're dealing with.
Most organizations actually have a standard. For example, I'm not sure what the standard is, but for example, if you work at a particular place, the crossover cables are always blue, and they make sure that any crossover cable is blue and everything else is different colors. The standard changes for where you work, but if you're sighted, what you often do is keep your crossover cables all one unique color so that you can always just tell that if it's a blue one, it's a crossover.
And if you're a blindy like me, you put tape on them. Yeah.
Yeah. I just got crossover cables with a different type of jacket than my straights.
And then you bring home your new integrated services router with a one spare cable in it, and it's grey. And you go, and what it is? Well, yellow or black.
Well, it's usually pretty cheap, so you hide it and don't worry about it anymore until you have to worry about it.
I usually assume it's a straight through and put it on as my guest cable if anyone brings a laptop and puts it on the second desk.
Yep.
But now we've got wireless, so that's less necessary. So anyway, any further comments? We've just gone over the hour, so it's probably time we wrapped it up and let some of the people in the eastern states go to bed. Welcome to Friday. So if there's any comments, questions, let's hear them.
All right, folks. Well, thank you for letting me come aboard this evening.
Absolutely. Great job.
Thank you for being here.
What are we going to call this, people? I'm going to be encoding it.
Chapter 8, supplementary, please.
You sure you don't want it as part 2?
No.
No, because part 2 is next week.
It's fitting in between Grace's. She's got stuff that's referenced in this that she's going to talk about in part 2, if that's all right.
Okay, I just want to make sure the file's still sorted properly, because I usually just call them part 1, 2, 3, no matter how many parts there are.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Unless you try 1A or something.
I was just going to say part
1A supplementary.
1A supplementary.
File name short or it won't fit in the index field.
Oh.
Remember? Yeah, I say call it part 2 and call it part 3 next week and just keep numbering the parts until we finish module 8 at part 52.
Oh, we're done with it next week.
Yeah.
All right, we'll work on that. We'll come up with some sort of name that makes it sort properly.
See if we can get supplementary into it somewhere, because that's really what it is.
Although, would you say that if you'd listened to part 1, you'd definitely want to listen to this one as well, though?
If they get all the concepts in part 1, they don't have to.
No.
Yeah, if they got it in part 1, they don't have to. It is a supplementary lecture. It is not part 2.
Okay.
All right, folks. So thanks for everyone's input. It's been absolutely fantastic. And we'll be back next week on the usual time for ITE 1, Chapter 8, Part 2, with Grace.
See you guys then.
Good night, ladies. Bye. Farewell, gentlemen.
Good night, everyone. It's time to leave you now.
Are you kidding? I'm not going to bed. I'll be up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I betcha.
Alright, see you guys later.
Good night, all.
Bye.
Night.